welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on the 8th of June, 2016. I'm Y-Rot, here with Rolo T. We're going to be talking about some manga. And
I believe so. I think we're going to try to talk about some manga.
We're going
to
try.
We have something a little bit more important, Nick, to talk about first. I've got a pretty startling announcement I need to make. So, it's good you're already sitting. I hope all of our audiences, too, if you're listening to this while you're driving, make sure you pull over your vehicle to the shoulder of the road first.
Your emergency lights.
Put on your emergency lights. Turn off the ignition, because you might even, in your stunned astonishment, you might accidentally slam on the on the ignition, and you just destroy your car. So make sure you just have all that off. Yeah. I'm watching anime again, Nick.
Okay.
Shit, I thought that would parlay into an hour and a half. Fuck. I didn't read any manga this week, Nick.
You didn't read anything.
I didn't read anything.
If it's not voiced and animated, then it's not good enough for me.
Yeah, Nick, I always thought that it was...
Joe of here.
I always thought that manga was the only way to go. Then I realized they animated and add music and voices, and it's so much better. Why aren't we doing anime? Now, I've been watching some anime, because I've been watching the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure now on Funimation, and I didn't realize, or not Funimation, Crunchyroll. I didn't realize at the time that Crunchyroll, I guess if you just wait a week, you can get it for free. I was like, I just had to pay for a subscription, so I have one, and I've just been too lazy to cancel it, so I was like, yeah, fuck it, why don't I check out this Phoenix Wright anime? I like Phoenix Wright, I haven't played the first game in a while, so I've been checking out some of that. And then just on an off chance, I saw a Crunchyroll ad on Facebook for a clip from the show Kiznaver, I think it's called. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's only, they only say the word in Japanese a couple times. But I decided to just give that a shot. And I'm 5 or 6 episodes into it. I'm having a lot of fun. Nick, I feel like I've, now I'm excited. Because now whenever someone asks us an anime-related question on our Q&As, I don't have to immediately respond with, I don't watch anime. I have no idea. What are you talking about? Stop making up words. And I think it's pretty important. And I wanted to share that with you, Nick, on today,
okay.
Best Friends Day.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Do we want to do anything to celebrate it?
I don't know. I'm not good at thinking of ideas. I'm not good at expressing intimacy in any way, shape, or form.
But by humoring the idea, you are accepting that we are, of course, best friends.
I'll accept it, yes.
Sweet. Awesome.
Best friends are like people that you send to do your dirty work, right? They're like cronies. It's just another term for it, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Starscream and Megatron are best friends. They're super besties.
Well, no matter how many times they betray each other, they do end up back together.
Yeah.
Know?
That's the perfect kind of relationship.
We've cracked the code of Transformers.
Finally, that show makes sense to me. After so long, I was like, why do they turn into cars? And I just needed this one piece to finally connect all the little dots.
Friendship, that's why.
Yeah.
It's like a fairy tale Transformers crossover.
What
powers our transformation? Friendship. Alright!
I'm like, what? I thought it was the Allspark. The Allspark is friendship. I'm like, wow, this is really blowing my mind. And also kind of destroying this universe is Mystique in a little bit of a way.
Oh, God. I almost launched into a fairy tale rant because of this week's chapter in that conversation, too.
Real quick, though, Nick, I also want to just note something. We completely neglected to even mention it. I guess just maybe it slipped both of our minds. Weekly Manga Recap's over 5 years old now. We just passed by our 5th-year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
We made a much bigger deal about the 4 years.
I noticed that back in April that we were creeping up on it, and then I completely forgot all last month.
Yeah.
So.
It didn't, yeah, I guess because we were doing comedy month for April, and as soon as that was done, we're like, well, we don't have to do anything special for next month.
It was fun. And then, also, we were pretty busy the whole month. So
yeah. And then I looked at it, I was like, oh yeah, that was 5 years. We made such a big deal out of 4 years. We didn't do anything for 5 years, which is a much bigger milestone.
Well, we covered JoJo and Pokemon in May. So, our picks. See, we're going to retroactively assume that was what our birthday present to ourselves was.
I can dig that then. I don't have any silverware for you though, which is apparently what you're supposed to give on the 5th-year anniversary. That's the silverware anniversary, which doesn't sound very romantic at all.
If we're going to have to, like...
Here you go, honey! I got you spoons!
If we're going to stick to, like, traditional, like, marriage anniversary stuff for our podcast, then it's gonna be kind of awkward with my girlfriends.
Nick,
all of our important anniversaries are gonna follow a little bit after the podcast anniversary.
I'm like, Nick, this is the negligee anniversary. Here you go.
This is the one where we start doing really weird sex stuff.
This is when the podcast goes to the next level.
Anyhow. We're gonna have to bring the mood back to...
Way down.
Way too... I hope you guys enjoyed being happy from our jokey mood. It's because for the next 30 to 40, we're going to be kind of sad.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed humor at the expense of what we're talking about, because I really don't know. There's not a whole lot for the next little bit here.
We'll see.
Just guilt.
But a recommendation we took a couple of weeks ago was Koi no Kitachi, which translates to the shape of the voice, or, as it is anglicized and dubbed, a silent voice, which were poetic sounding. Basically, it... You never notice I seem to say that a lot whenever I start to explain stuff? Basically.
Hey, we all have our little, our phrases, our trademarks, so to say.
Our habits.
Yeah, once you get it picked out, though, or someone picks it out for you, then it's infuriating.
You can't avoid it. You're doomed to repeat it over and over.
I didn't realize I did it until I worked at Target, and one of my coworkers was like, you finish sentences with then a lot when you don't need to. It annoys the shit out of me. And I was like, what are you talking about? And ever since then, I always pick out when I say the word then at the end of a sentence. And I'm like, it doesn't belong there.
No!
I'm like, oh, Fat Sean was right!
Then,
yeah,
it's usually not even stuff that you even have to really feel guilty about. Like, it's not something that's particularly weird, but if you're just aware of it and it's a little bit different, then you get kind of self-conscious about it.
Yes, I agree.
So basically, this story is about bullying. It's about suffering. It's about failure to communicate more than anything else. Because our main two characters are these two people who one bullied the other when they were in elementary school. And now they have reunited in high school, and the relationship between them is very different. And the hook is that one of the two, Shoko, who is a girl, or she gets called by her last name, Nishimiya, a lot.
Nishimiya.
She is pretty much almost entirely deaf. She has hearing aids, they note, so maybe she's not entirely deaf, but she's very, very close to being entirely deaf. She might be entirely deaf by the time that she's an adult, because I don't think that they have her react to any sound whatsoever when she's a teenager, whereas she does when she's a little girl, at least some of them. And her bully is Shoya. And basically what happened when they were kids was Shoya was just a bright little kid. He was trying to entertain himself and entertain his classmates, and he took to bullying Nishimiya, not out of a pure, like, hatred of her, but because a bunch of the kids found her annoying, because they kind of had to be pulled back a little bit so she could keep up. And instead of sticking together with her, they ostracized her a bit. And Ishida she was an acceptable target for him. And so he started bullying her because people thought it was really funny. And because she didn't object to it. Not because she wasn't suffering, but because basically she was too nice to raise a real objection with him. She didn't get really indignant, she didn't cry, she just kind of kept on trucking.
She smiled, very positive. And the story is told through Shoyo's eyes. So you never see what her inner thoughts are. Mm-hmm. You just see she's always reacting to it with a smile. And all that does is anger Shoya more.
Because everyone thinks that she's creepy.
Yeah.
Eventually, however, after Nishimiya's been bullied a whole lot because she keeps on bringing home these broken hearing aids, and so, of course, eventually her mother notices and complains. So this worker comes to the school, like this social worker, someone basically from, like, the Center for, like, Deaf Kids or Kids with Disabilities, and says, look, we know that there's bullying going on here. Will one of you take responsibility for this? And the entire class points out Shoya, even though some of them not only encouraged his behavior, but sometimes even actively took part in it, including his jackass of a teacher, who is probably the most evil person in this entire series.
Which is strange, because he has some very big competition for that role at certain points. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that teacher is a real shit.
He's just an asshole. Like, you can understand most of the kids, because they're bratty kids, and some of them don't know better even when they're teenagers. But he's a fucking adult. And instead of trying to keep these kids in line, eventually just like, well, obviously, you know, of course this was to be expected when they had that deaf girl here, that, you know, faulty child, basically.
Yeah, like, there's a point where Shoyo makes, like, a joke. I'm going to call him Ishida, because that's how I know him, and Shoyo and Shoko are too similar, so I'm going to mix those up all the time, so...
Well, that's a deliberate, that's a deliberate choice. They're named things.
But, Ishida, like, makes a joke at one point, and the teacher, like, chuckles at it, like a joke about Shoko. And that's, like, something I could have technically kind of overlooked. I'm like, look, right. You know, he's somebody's fine humor in the world. It's not evil to, you know, laugh at a joke at someone else's expense. Mm-hmm. But it's later on when he starts, like, referring to her as a like, he's like, I know it must have been so hard on you guys to have, like, a detriment in your class like this. It's like, what the fuck, dude? She's a person.
Even he saw her as a burden on the class and on him because he had to deal with a special needs kid. So, great teacher! Anyway, so as a result of this, Ishida suddenly becomes the target of bullying in the class. And it's a very interesting sequence because for a while, he doesn't get it. He doesn't get that he's suddenly the target of bullying. He knows that his friends are acting kind of weird around him, but it takes a while for it to really sink in that basically he is the new Nishimiya. He's the target of all the bullying. And there is a really bad... he gets a reputation for having been a bully, so now everyone feels justified in bullying and ostracizing him because he did do awful things to Nishimiya. But he is made to basically bear the burden of everyone's guilt, and then up until he is in, like, his last or second to last year of high school, just shuts himself off from everybody because nobody really wants to be his friend, because everyone knows, like, oh, he bullied that deaf girl when he was a kid. You should be his friend and stuff. So that's really the first five chapters or so of the series told through flashback. And then, once that's over, the rest of it is when they're teenagers. Because Ishida's had such a bad time in his life that he decides to kill himself. But before he does that, he wants to set things in order. He wants to, you know, leave without carrying any, you know, unresolved feelings with him. So his mom had to pay for all of the hearing aids that he broke. So he earns enough money to pay her back. He tidies up his room so that it's, you know, all done, and then he seeks out Nishimiya after learning sign language so that he can communicate with her and try and set things right a little bit. He really just wants to talk with her for a little bit so he can say, you know, I'm sorry, I'm gonna go now and kill myself.
Yeah.
What ends up happening, however, is instead Nishimiya kind of befriends him.
She's very excited that he's reconnecting with her.
Because she hasn't seen anyone from elementary school, and she did have good feelings and good memories from the time that she had with them, despite dealing with all of the bullying. And so over time, the two of them get closer, and Ishida, of course, you know, no longer wants to kill himself, There's a really emotional scene where he apologizes to his mom because she figures out that was what he was thinking, and he says, and he promises, I won't do that again. But the problem is, he was counting on that being his escape from his messed up life, and now he has to deal with it. He still doesn't have any friends. He doesn't have any direction for what he's really gonna do in his life, because he was counting on killing himself. And he still has that label of, oh, you bullied a deaf kid when you were a kid. So, how is he going to deal with that, and how is he going to approach this, his relationship with this girl, whose childhood he essentially helped to ruin? And that's just the start.
Yeah. This is... it's going to be tough to make too many jokes about this sort of series, because this is a series that, you know, has a real kind of story and message that's getting across. It's somewhat similar to, if you remember way back when we reviewed Bitter Virgin, which was another series that had kind of a heavy subject matter that it takes very seriously. This is along the same lines, a little less severe, because there are some things I could definitely be like, well, it's kind of fucked up and weird, but it's a series that has to do with a lot of individuals who have a lot of, sort of, I guess, the ramifications that came from these bullying acts, and how these different roles that everyone played within that relationship, how all of them have a lot of self-loathing for themselves afterwards. And, you know, the crux of it is Ishida, how he feels bad for, you know, ruining Ishimiya's life, for, you know, how he's been bullied and completely alienated from everybody, how he, you know, hurt his mom so much and made her cry, all these sorts of things. And he, you know, was going to attempt suicide, and now he's, you know, trying to figure out what to do, and he doesn't know really what to do. He sees everyone around him, all of his classmates, with X's over their faces. It's a stylistic choice of the series, because those are people, when he can't see their face, that he isn't really looking at. You know, he doesn't see them, he doesn't feel there's any kind of mutual connection or anything like that between them. And it sort of creates this interesting state where he starts having to branch out and connect with other people and try to start building a life. So it's, you know, a very emotionally heavy series. You mentioned it. Now, I'm not going to get into spoilers too much yet, but the scene where his mother kind of confronts him about this, his attempted suicide, is one of the hardest scenes in the series for me to get through, because it's so brutal. It's like, oh, you know, his mom's a single mom. You don't really know what happened to the dad until the very end. You know, she's been raising two kids on her own, and she's been dealing with such a, you know, not a shitty kid, a kid with a lot of issues, you know, a whole bunch throughout the start of the series. And there's a scene, like, within the first three or four chapters where she goes to apologize to Nishimiya's mother on behalf of her son, and you don't see how that conversation goes. You do see Nishimiya's mom walking by, though, and she catches sight of Ishida, and she just looks at him, and she says this remark that's like, I can't remember exactly, but I'm paraphrasing, you have the same thuggish face as her, or something like that, you know? Basically saying that she looked at his mom and saw her in kind of derogatory way, like she was also kind of like a brute or something like that. And it, like, broke my heart, because I'm like, oh, his mom's so nice. You can't do it. Like, had I been in that situation, I would have been like, all right, first and foremost, I'm punching Nishimiya's mom, because you don't talk to my mom that way. And then two, I'm going to hurl myself down the river, because clearly my mother deserves something better. She doesn't deserve a son like me. So maybe otters will pick me up, and perhaps I'll be a better otter son. I don't know. But I couldn't imagine putting my mother through that kind of turmoil.
Well, I mean, Nishimiya's mother actually deserves as a great way to segue into this, which is one of the primary themes of the series, which is illustrated by the fact that Nishimiya is deaf. Communication between people is not always very easy. Nishimiya's mother, of course, is trying to look out for her kids. And so it makes sense that, you know, when she looks at Shoya's mom, all she can see is the mother of the kid who bullied my daughter. Mm-hmm. It makes sense that whenever Shoya is trying to kind of make amends, she's not willing to forgive him. And she has this really great line that she tells him after she slapped him probably the fifth time or something like that, because every time he shows up in front of her,
there's a lot of slapping in this series. This is a violent series, surprisingly.
She just says, "My daughter will never get back the happy childhood that you took away from her. She can never have that." She doesn't know exactly what's best for her kids, but she's doing what she thinks is right, because she is also on her own. Their dad isn't around. She's looking after them. She's got to be away from them a whole lot and leave them in the care of her mother. And so she's trying to raise two kids with one job. And so despite the fact that Yuzuru, Nishimiya's middle sister, resents her, it makes sense because they don't understand each other. They don't really understand why each of them are doing certain things, and they have different approaches on how they should treat Nishimiya and what they should do about her. And, for example, their mother refuses to learn sign language. She just wants their family to basically be normal, whereas that's not the best for Nishimiya. You know, she needs help. She needs people to be able to actually communicate with her. And just think about that. Like, she can't effectively communicate with her own daughter, despite the fact that she's trying to look out for her in a very cruel world.
It's not even that. Shoko can't communicate with any of her family because she discourages anyone from learning sign language.
Yeah, she says, don't use sign language at the table. Don't use it at the house. Don't do it.
Yeah.
So,
you know, Shoko's shit out of luck on that. She has to kind of rely on what limited hearing she can or her book.
And she carries a notebook with her that she writes down on, and she uses that to communicate with people. And even some people are unwilling to use that. They use that as method bully her, and like, oh no, just say it. Just say it. Why can't you say it? Come on, use your mouth. It's like, she can't. She's deaf, you asshole. But people don't get that.
There's reasons for all of these sorts of things, too. Why people are the way they are in this series is usually explained in a pretty sort of a sad way.
And what it comes down to is the fact that a big theme of the series is just miscommunication. People don't understand each other because they can't peer inside each other's minds. And the manga plays with that a bit because the grand majority of the series is seen through Shoya's eyes. Through Ishida's eyes, I should say. There are a few scenes that are where, of course, he's not around, and so there's some other, you know, it's like, you know, just third-person perspective. But in general, for most of it, he's the only character whose, like, mind we see inside of. Mm-hmm. He's the perspective character. Up until towards the end, when pretty much every important character gets their own chapter explaining this is what this character's been going through, through their own perspective. And that's critical for the series, because all these characters who you haven't really gotten throughout this entire time, all of a sudden there's this explanation and it makes more sense, and it's, you know, the same events in the series play a different way, and it's not like they ever explain themselves fully to each other. There's one character who's got some really dark inner thoughts, whereas he's always kind of almost this idealistic sort of heroic character through most of it, and he never explains, like, oh no, this is how I actually feel about these things. But that's the point, you know, you don't understand everything when you're in real life. Like, you and I get along pretty darn well, but there are some things that you have never said to me and some things I've never said to you that are probably never going to come up, and if we each knew those things, we would probably see each other differently.
I killed a man in France last year, Nick.
Well, that I knew about. I helped you bury the body.
Oh, that's right. You were there. Who haven't I told about? The police. That's who I haven't told about that yet. Okay. Yeah, it's all coming together now.
Okay, everyone in the chat room, don't tell the Hops about that, right? Okay. Right. Pinky promise. Okay?
They were so good about that last week.
That's really it. It's a really powerful series. It's especially at certain points. And at times it's a very surprising series of points, because it deals with some things that I really haven't seen sometimes ever, but usually just, you know, not very often in manga. It deals with familial abandonment really, really morosely, but realistically. There is one side character. This is just like a background character. They never really do anything. Ishida's sister.
Yeah.
We never see her face. She's basically just this background character. She's a lot older than Ishida. And we kind of see through a child's eyes. Because the first time we see her is when Ishida's still in elementary school while the bullying's going on. And he makes him like, oh, yeah, man, my sister's got a new boyfriend and stuff. Oh, hey, how you doing, you know? And then eventually she just goes through a bunch of boyfriends who keep on leaving her. So presumably she's just promiscuous. But then eventually we meet Maria, who is his niece and is very obviously half black.
She's Brazilian, yes.
Because
one of her boys, Pedro.
Yeah, so it's kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, well, that's nice. She finally found a guy who would stick around with her. Good. But other than, you know, this cute little, you know, half black, half Japanese kid walking around being, you know, adorable and 5 years old, there's no real point to it other than that. It's just that, oh, yeah, there was this character who, you know, kind of had bad luck with men. She didn't find good boyfriends up until she did. That's it, you know? But it's little details like that that I really appreciated, because it made the series, it made the, you know, world seem more real, that these people just had freaking bad luck at times, or problems that you could buy as real.
I'm trying to think what I can really talk about with Gout Game and spoilers or anything like that.
We could talk about some of the characters before getting into spoilers, because show up.
We should also probably, I think, give like a general consensus and get into spoilers, because it's gonna be tough to talk about characters too much without getting into some spoilers, without then repeating ourselves when spoilers come around. I'll just say I think this series is, you know, extremely well written at times. It's a relatively quick series to read, too. Once you get past, like, the first, like, five or so chapters, everything's very quick and, you know, kind of blazes through. One issue I did have with it was the chapter structure was a bit odd. At points, you'd go from one chapter to the next, and there was a period of time that just kind of got skipped. Mm-hmm. Or it would start, rather, with two pages from the last chapter, and then would start the new content. Which, I'm sure was very helpful when you're reading it week by week. But, you know, now the series is complete. You can read it all, like, on Crunchyroll like I did. If you're going through it in that way, it gets kind of confusing when you're like, wait, didn't I just go through this page? Like, oh, right, new chapter, sort of thing. It's a bit odd in that way. It's a minor complaint overall in the grand scheme of things, but something I did just want to kind of note in case that is a big issue for some people. I like the series a lot. I don't love it. I there's some things that I wish the series had done. But I absolutely will recognize that this is one of the better written series that we've done in the show. I recognize that it touches on a topic that I hadn't really put a lot of thought into, and it absolutely has scenes that are going to, you know, make you stop to think, I think. And definitely just some scenes that are emotionally just heartbreaking. So, to all that, I'd say it's a great recommendation, but if you're like, I don't like being sad. I want action. Are there battles in it? And I'm like, well, for two chapters, kind of, but... Outside of that, if that's not your thing, you know, this isn't going to be the series for you. But if you like dramas, if you like kind of, you know, a strong narrative, if you like sort of talking about serious issues or serious matters, and I think all that, it does very well.
The way that I would sum this series up is it's got fantastic characters, but there are problems with certain parts of the plot that I have. I think that, in general, the way that the story plays out is very, very good. But there are some details, particularly towards the end, where I kind of found myself asking, well, why'd you do that? For example, there's this thing about a movie that, basically, they're trying to make an amateur film throughout a large chunk of the series. And it's kind of made to be more important than I think it actually is.
Yeah, I was like, that movie blows.
Well, that's
I was right there up there with that super douchey critic.
Well, that's not really the point that I have about it, but it's sort of built up to be this making the film is built to be this important thing, and I think that if it had gone uncompleted, I wouldn't have really cared one way or the other. Something just fell off my desk.
Ghosts.
And so when they did build it up, I mean, it's, I think they focused a little bit too much on it without, they focused too much and too little on it.
The film isn't as important as I think it, you know, as it wants you to believe it is.
I understand what it was going for, but it didn't quite match up with my feelings on it. And the ending, I think, I understand why they did the ending the way that they did, but it's too open-ended for my liking. And also, it ends on another, maybe they got together note, which I fucking hate.
It would have been a nice series to have, actually a very important series to, I think, have given us a flash-forward kind of ending, like 5 years into the future, to see where these characters are. Because it ends, you know, I guess mild spoiler, but it ends in, you know, within the same year that it starts. So, for a series that had a lot to do with self-loathing, suicide, people constantly feeling like they're not worth anything, it'd been nice to have seen them 5 years later and be like, oh, they're okay. That's good. Because you get the idea at some point where you're like, all right, well, this character's okay right now. What's going to happen when they're not surrounded by this group of people or, you know, things like that? So as a little flash forward, I think, would have been really nice.
Maybe it would have felt, like too fairy tale-ish. Like not T-A-I-L, but T-A-L-E. You know, and then everything was happy, because that's not really, I think, the point of it. Mm-hmm. But for something that is supposed to be about overcoming those negative thoughts about, you know, yourself and other people, yeah, especially considering it ends on the note of, and now the rest of their lives are ahead of them, it would have been nice to have a little bit of assurance of, and they were good lives.
Well, even like, I think it was in Bitter Virgin where there was like a note in the final chapter where the main character's like, yeah, we're together. This probably won't last, like most high school relationships don't, but it's okay. It still ends on a happy note, but there's also a note that's like, look, everything doesn't end like a fairy tale or things like that. I think you could have put some realism in there while still giving us the impression that there's at least happiness within this conclusion in this moment.
It ends on, how do I describe it? It ends on a note of, and now the rest of their lives are ahead of them. Mm-hmm. They
have literally at graduation.
They've graduated from high school, and now the rest of their lives are ahead of them. Well, but how long are their lives?
Do they make it?
Does Vegeta ever stop being a dumbass and realize Nishimiya loves him?
Or any of the girls that like him do?
Yeah. Anyway, I guess we'll head into more in-depth character analysis and spoiler warnings then, because there's more to say about some of these characters.
There's
especially
a lot.
The main ones, for that matter.
There are a lot of spoilers. So, again, if you want to check out the series, you didn't read it before our recommendation, hearing us talk about it has intrigued you, this is the point where you don't want to stop listening, and go read it again. You can get it on Crunchyroll if you have a subscription to that. You can get the entire series on there. It's a very quick series to read. I think the print volumes are also out, so you might be able to pick those up, but I'm not.
The latest volume just came out, okay. Like at the beginning of the month.
So you can pick up the entire thing in whatever format you go to. And
also, there's going to be an animated movie coming out,
yes,
later this year.
And an anime, I think. Or is the anime already out?
And no, it's an anime film.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So go check that out, and if you are one of those people that are going to go, you know, pop out and you don't want spoilers, we do time codes now, so I won't try to give you an estimate. Just, you know, if you're listening on iTunes or whatever, it's in the description. Just skip ahead to that time, and then we'll be talking about Black Clover.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow, so, suicide. Nishimiya tries to commit it, and it's very sad.
This is where I think how it's tough to talk about spoilers without getting into, you know, characters without getting spoilers. Right, I spoke there. Mm-hmm. The character of Nishimiya is one who, at the start of it, I was kind of like, this character's a little bit unrealistic, don't you think? Like, she's not angry at all about this kid.
She seems almost perfect.
Yeah, you're
she's
like...
constantly smiling.
Like, not for nothing, but wouldn't you be a little angry? Until you finally get into her life a little bit, and you understand what her thought process is, and the entire time, she's always believed she was the one who was fucking things up. She has this horrible amount of self-loathing because she believes that she constantly ruins things around her. And there's this chapter... It's honestly a shitty chapter, but the moment in it is great, where we find out about this note that she wrote to Ueno, which is another one of Ishida's friends. She writes this note to her that essentially details everything she feels about herself and her kind of conclusions on stuff.
And it almost sounds like it was written by a robot.
It's you know, 20 chapters later, we find out what's in it, and it's, you know, a lot of heartbreaking kind of analysis, because the way she sort of phrased, she's like, you know, I'm always the last one to know what's going on when things are happening. You know, sometimes I don't even know what people are talking about at the time, so I smile and nod as like a neutral expression so I don't make people angry, because I know that I'm always dragging people down. I know I'm always ruining things for them. It's a very depressive, sad way that she looks at her entire life and the entire world around her. And, like, the response that she gets for that. And this all happens after she just tried to commit suicide and Ishida gets hurt saving her. And she then just gets...
very tense sequence, too.
Yeah.
Very realistic, honestly, because she doesn't realize Ishida has followed her or shown up in her apartment and she's going to jump off the building. And Ishida races over as she's, you know, jumped over the railing, and he grabs her arm. But, like, his legs are already hurt from when he fell earlier in the day, and he's not Superman. So he's, like, you know, wedged himself in the rail, and he's trying to pull her up. And they hurt themselves just from the act of him catching her. Very, very realistic, and basically he only barely managed to hold on long enough for her to, like, get a grip on the railing next to him, and then he ends up tumbling over the rail himself. Very scary.
Yeah, it's a pretty heavy chapter, and it's done pretty thematically of getting it while a festival's going on, so it's night, and you see fireworks going off in the background. It has the makings of a really huge chapter, and it kind of, you know, in the moment, you feel it comes out of nowhere. Because for the first time, it actually seems like she's happy. Like, she seems like she's a little bit happier about things. She's starting to kind of, like, give the impression that maybe she's getting more comfortable. Her entire family has gotten more comfortable with Ishida. Like, his mom actually allows him to come with them to this. And usually she's been very cold about things. They seem like they're making progress. Goes home to the apartment to go get something for Yuzuru. And then she's at the window, and you're like, holy shit, like, this... You know, and it makes sense once you find out what kind of mental state she's at, where she's been at. It all makes sense. It's just a very tragic kind of scene, and it's done, you know, extremely effectively.
Once we get Naoka Ueno's response to the letter, Ishida is in the hospital in a coma from the injuries he suffered saving Nishimiya, and Naoka, who is in love with Ishida, but is a huge bitch. She just, like, blames Nishimiya entirely for what's happened, and she's, like, screaming in her face over and grabbing her by the hair and slapping her and punching her.
Oh, she's beating the shit out of her. The reason I hate that those chapters, ultimately, is because for two chapters, it felt like a battle manga. Because it's like six straight panels of fucking, like, Ueko, like, just beating the shit out of her closed fist. At which point, the end of the chapter is Nishimiya's mom flying out of fucking nowhere to slap her. And then, like, half of the next chapter is Nishimiya's mom just beating the shit out of Ueno, which is satisfying as all hell. But I was like, holy shit, this is so much violence.
But, you know, Naoka's note to Nishimiya is, like, didn't you ever stop and think about how the people around you would, you know, feel if you killed yourself? You know, and it's because of you that he is in that hospital room. But of course, that doesn't help Nishimiya. She just thinks, "Oh, it was my fault that he's hurt. I messed something up again." And there's this absolutely heartbreaking chapter. Basically, at the end, like I said, every important character gets their own point of view chapter to explain what their mental state through the series has been. And Nishimiya's is heartbreaking because the first half of it or so is a dream that she's having where she imagines life if she could hear. And everyone's dialogue is messed up. It's the way that Mishimiya would say stuff. Because, of course, she doesn't actually know what stuff sounds like. So she's trying to imagine it, and she can't quite get it right. So everyone's words are a little bit distorted. And so she imagines... And so she imagines what life will be like. And so she imagines, oh, if Ishida teased her by doing what he did before, you know, making, you know, like barking sounds behind her in class, but then she would just turn around and be like, oh, stop that. You know, don't do it again. You know, or I'll be mad. Or, you know, and then their chorus in school singing together and everyone getting along properly because she can actually sing properly. And the thing that really, really got me was just her with a bunch of friends and her family, and her dad's there because her dad, abandoned them because she was deaf. And she imagines them all sitting together and watching TV, and her just, you know, turning to someone and going, "This is a really nice song." And it's like, "Oh, oh, because she can't listen to music."
The stuff that hit me the hardest, there was her little sister, I think, is a fantastic character, Yuzuru.
Oh, yeah,
Yuzuru. The amount of sacrifice that this girl has kind of put into herself for the benefit of her sister, how dedicated she is to her. And there's this nice long con where we know that she doesn't go to school or anything like that, and she spends a lot of her time just kind of taking pictures. And we find out later on she takes pictures of dead things, you know, corpses, essentially. And then hangs them around the house. And, you know, it's kind of like a morbid thing that their family stares at all the time. But we find out the reason why she does that, and this is another great chapter. I think it comes actually relatively around that same point. We find out what Shoko had said to her, because essentially before she got transferred, there was one day where she came home crying. And that was sort of the last time they interacted. And she said something to Yuzuru, and we don't know what it is. And you find out, and in that moment, she said, "I wish I was dead." So
she said, "I hate myself.
Yeah,
I want to die.
I want to die." So Yuzuru has been constantly putting pictures of dead things around the house, and like in her attempt to kind of discourage her. And this is after the suicide attempt, and all three of them are kind of inside the kitchen as Yuzuru is like taking down the photos. She's like, "I don't know why I thought that would work," and it's just like. I was just heartbreaking to kind of see that effort was going into it, and just
she wanted Mishimiya to see how horrible death was by taking this picture of these corpses and hanging them around the house. And so her mom is like, "Well, why are you taking those down?" She said, "Because the only reason I took them all was so that I thought that she would be disgusted by death and not want to kill herself. And now I realize it was pointless." So the two of them just, you know, go around the house while they're crying, taking these pictures down.
I should note, by the way, I think if you don't know what's happening, you might sound like this series is nothing but depression. It's not. I also like Yuzuru because she's a funny character, and she's a lot of like high energy and pretty goofy.
It's great because like when she's first introduced, they explain later on that because a recurring thing, Ishida's mother is a stylist. And haircuts are a thing that gets brought up a number of times. Most importantly, Mishimiya's mother wanted her daughter to get her hair cut super short so that she would look like a boy, because she thought if she looked like a boy, that she would look tougher and kids would, you know, maybe leave her alone. But Mishimiya didn't want to do that. She wanted to have a cute hairstyle. So Yuzuru instead was like, "I'll keep my hair short. I'll be the tough one so that, you know, I can protect her." And she goes around looking like a boy most of the time. And so when Ishida first approaches Mishimiya, Yuzuru goes to him and he's like, "I'm her boyfriend. We take baths together."
Yeah, that's my girl.
And so Ishida's like, okay. And he just walks off like, I guess Mishimiya's just into younger guys. I guess this totally buys it.
He's like, "I guess she just likes dudes who look like they're eight. Okay. Fair enough.
I've read Akisora. I buy it." Learning that they're related later, which is like, "I've read Akisora. I buy it." Speaking of comic relief, Nagatsuka is one of my favorite characters in this series. He's just this chubby little kid that Ishida helps out one day almost on a whim. he sees Nagatsuka being bullied, and at this point, you know, he just, you know, he sees X's over every classmate's face. But and on a whim, because the guy's like, oh, you know, give me your bike, so I'm going to borrow it. And Ishii is like, here, just take my bike instead. And then later on, Nagatsuka actually goes and finds it for him, and at that point, they're just friends. But Nagatsuka is very defensive of his friendship with Ishida, and he's got all this energy surrounding him, and he's just a really funny character, I feel like. He provides a lot of really much-needed comic relief, and then when he's sad, it's even more sad, because that's the kind of series this is.
You're alone on Nagatsuka. I fucking hated him.
You hate him?
He started to grow on me a little bit, but he's such an asshole. I completely... It got linked to us, but there's an English interview with the mangaka from this where she talks a little bit about the series and some good, very good insight into it. Mm-hmm. But she mentioned, she's like, I don't like Nagatsuka. I mean, he's mostly just me, like at my most silliest, but I would not be friends with him if he was a real person.
Maybe that's why I kind of appreciate him, though, is because, like, in that same interview, she notes a lot of characters in the series her fans don't like. They just think of them as villains. And she says, well, neither of them, none of them are actually evil people. And that's one of the things about, you know, the miscommunication is, you know, people don't understand each other, so you only get one half of the story. So people like Naoka and Kawai, who I hate more than Naoka, by the way, they were part of, you know, this class that bullied Nishimiya, and then later on, they're both kind of awful people for vastly different reasons. But they've got their own way of seeing the world. It's a wrong way of seeing the world and seeing their relationship with Ishida, with Nishimiya, with everyone in their class. But there's a reason why they act the way that they do, and why they think that their actions are justified. And that's a really important part of the series. Kawai's big thing is that she's Little Miss Perfect, and she thinks that life is a drama film, I think, because she'll give these big dramatic speeches and be like, come on, let's all get together, everyone, but she's just a manipulative bitch.
She's strangely, selectively evil. Like, she just seems to selectively forget a lot of things that were bad that she did. And only seems to apologize in very, like, half bursts. Like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. Oh, but you're a bitch!
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. We all have to work together to overcome this. As opposed to, I fucked up and only me. she gives this, like, big dramatic speech at the end. Like, her chapter to explain herself really did not do a whole lot to make me get her. Because she basically was... She just hears some people talking shit about her in class because she's Little Miss Perfect, and they're like, why is she trying to be such a perfect girl? Is she just doing it because that one, she wants that one guy to get with her and stuff? Who does she think that she's fooling? And then she goes, now I know what kind of treatment Ishida and Nishimiya went through when they were bullied.
Now
I don't know the fucking half of it.
Now I know what it's like to be bullied.
It's like people were just spreading rumors about her. It's not like they fucking drew on her desk or wrecked her hearing aids or whatever. planted plants in her shoes. and then, I really like Nagatsuka, like I was saying. He's definitely got his faults, mostly because he's got an ego to him. But at the least, he's really the one guy who's constantly looking out for Ishida until they have a really big disagreement. And even that has a point to it because they get into a disagreement over a really stupid thing. And at least this really cool moment that I like where they resolve things very easily and Ishida just... They're kind of getting back together. They're working on this film that Nagatsuka's trying to make. And they start getting back to work and all of a sudden Ishida just starts crying without realizing it. And everyone's like, are you okay? What's going on? And she just thinks to himself, I had forgotten what it was like to argue with somebody for no reason, because I haven't had a friend like that in such a long time that I could have that kind of relationship with. That's probably why I like it. He's basically like Ishida's rock. Even though Ishida doesn't appreciate him all the time, he's constantly looking out for him because he treasures their friendship so much. And he does, I do really like some of the moments that he has that are comedic. Like, for example, when Nao is first introduced back into the story, she tries to leave a confession for Ishida, but it ends up in Nagatsuka's things instead. So Nagatsuka gets in and is like, "That cute girl confessed to me!" And Ishida's like, "Oh yeah, way to go, man!
Great job, bro!"
And so he goes to meet her, and she's like, "No, you fat little ugly piece of shit! It's not for you, it's for Ishida!" And he's like, "I knew that. I was just testing you. And now I've seen the type of person you are, so I know you're not good for him."
He is funny at times. I can definitely agree with that. He has his moments.
But probably the most interesting side character for me was probably Mashiba, who is... He's introduced into the story very suddenly.
Yeah, I need to ask, did I miss a chapter? Because I stopped reading one night. I was like, all right, 26 chapters is enough. I'm going to stop. The next chapter, they were in a fucking amusement park, and he had met his old classmate, and there was just this dude hanging out with the group. I was like, who is this? I picked up right where I left off. Who are you?
There is a scene where Mashiba just kind of randomly comes over to Ishida, and is just like, "Hey, Ishida, how you doing?" basically. It's after the Ishida jumping into the river scene gets released, the picture that user took gets put online, and essentially that makes Ishida stand out a little bit, and we're led to believe that Mashiba just kind of notices him because of that. And so he just decides to start hanging out with him. And during the course of the series, Ishida gets really uneasy around him because Mashiba, you know, brings up a couple of times, "I really hate bullies. I really hate when little kids are bullied."
And I beat up bullies.
Well, he almost does. There's this.
Legitimately, any time there's a bully, he threatens to fight them or put some kind of aggressive action against them.
There's this really cool scene where they're walking along and they see this, you know, fat little girl getting bullied by her classmates. They're like, "You hold our bags." He's like, "I don't want to hold your bags. Do it, just do it." And so he goes over to her and he takes the bags from her and he throws one backpack really loudly on the ground. He just throws the rest of the bags at the kids and he just says, "Carry your own backpacks." And that's it. Like, he'll go hardcore on an elementary schooler's ass. He hates bullying so much. Then he learns about, you know, they meet with Ishida's teacher at one point, and he throws his drink in the guy's face because he learns about how he mistreated, about how he's talking about Nishimiya. And Ishida's getting really uneasy around the guy because he's thinking to himself, what if this guy finds out what an awful person I was when I was a kid? And then when everything comes out, you know, there's this big, you know, fight between the entire group, and, you know, Ishida's really upset, he's really depressed, and he's like, things are going to go back to the way they were, I'm going to be all by myself, and he says to Mashiba, "You said that you would, you know, punch whoever you found out bullied Nishimi when she was a kid. Well, it was me, so if you still want to hit me, then hit me." And Mashiba punches him in the head, and he walks away. And then later on, we find out that Mashiba is kind of really messed up in the head.
He's a sociopath a little bit.
He's a little bit. It turns out that when he was bullied, he just got really resentful towards everyone. He talks about, he comes off as being this, you know, cool kid now, but he really thought of himself as being this weird outsider. And the reason he reached out to Ishida was because, well, this guy is even weirder than me. Maybe if I associate with him, I'll seem normal by comparison. And it apparently worked, because he's, like, one of the most popular guys in the class by, like, the end of the story. And he also talks about, oh, you know, I want to help kids. I want to, you know, help them out. And it's this really dark reveal because he hears about some classmates are, you know, already having kids. And he thinks to himself, you know, if I become their teacher, I'll get to look after their kids. And I'll go get to look after them and see their every mistake and see what kind of person they become. And it's like, Jesus Christ,
are you going to kill him? Yeah, are you going to take this kid?
And, you know, when he first talks about it, he's like, you know, I thought about it and I was like, you know, I'd really like to, you know, be a teacher, you know, look after, you know, my old classmates' kids. And now it's like, I'd really like to be a teacher and look after my old classmates' kids.
It's such a noble goal that he explains in the most terrifying way.
But a really interesting character. I honestly wish that he had gotten to do a little bit more. Like I said, right before we talked about, got more into the characters, I like the characters in this story, I think, more than I like the plot itself at times. A lot of them have really good moments. I just think that the way that everything unfolds by the end left me a little bit wanting. But some really good characters, I really did like a lot of what they got to do. And really like this series overall.
I like the series a lot. As I said, I think there's some moments that are absolutely just hard-hitting. Almost every scene with Ishida's mom is heartbreaking.
I didn't even talk about Sahara, damn it.
Those moments are painful. Even like a scene where she visits her son in the hospital and she can't really say anything to Shoko. You know, initially it's sad too because she first thinks that the reason he got hurt was he was trying to do something. Like, she assumes he was at fault and is starting to apologize to Nishimiya's mom until Nishimiya and Shoko both, like, you know, bow down and apologize. And it's heartbreaking stuff there. I liked a lot of the development we got. I did just wish, and this is a series that's, you know, it's very well written. It, you know, I believe there's actually some sort of accreditation to the National Hearing Impaired Society in Japan to it. Like, there was some kind of, like, actual consultation to the series to kind of give it some realism. You know, the mangaka, I guess, actually had family who work, you know, with the hearing impaired, so it's got, you know, a lot of authenticity to it in that regard. But one thing I really wish they had done for a series that dealt so heavily with depression and suicide and self-loathing, I really had wished therapy and or professional help of some kind had been mentioned at the end, because essentially everyone is like, wow, that movie was great, let's connect with one another, and then seemingly all of our problems are solved, and you're like, maybe for one or two of you this led to a big thing, but there are a couple of these characters who I'm like, they have like deeper seated psychological issues that really do need professional help, because this is, you know, not going to be a permanent fix.
I mean, you know, you could say, like, oh, Nagatsuka will be okay, you know, but let's go over the way that this unfolded for a couple of people, yeah. Ishida nearly died, Nishimiya attempted to commit suicide, her family dealt with tremendous grief and hardship, so did Ishida's mom, Naoka is obviously disturbed, and she got into a fight with two members of, you know, the girl's family that tried to commit suicide. So clearly there are at least five people who really, really, really should seek help in this, or at least should have people check up on them. It's, you know, just to be safe.
It's, you know, just that sense of, like, look, talking it out, connecting with other people, that stuff's great, but some of these things are legitimate, you know, psychological issues that you need therapy to work through. And it's not something that you're just going to be able to talk to somebody who your friends will, like, getting closure, all that stuff, awesome. But you need help and you might need medication because there might be imbalances and stuff like that going on. Like, you know, the best way to fight depression isn't just to hash it out with some buddies over a movie, you know? Mm-hmm. It's that sort of thing. Where I wish that had happened and I'd have been like, because that's why I'm so concerned at the end of the series, when there's no, like, here they are 5 years later. I'm like, look, when all these characters stop hanging around each other, do those thoughts keep creeping back in? Because coming from somebody who has a lot of self-loathing and Catholic guilt to endure, I know that those thoughts don't really go away. So that was just my thought process on things.
You know, if instead of, and now the rest of our lives are ahead of us, maybe even end the series with everyone still going to class and just have a note that's like, occasionally Nishimiya sees a therapist now, occasionally Ishida sees a therapist, or something like that.
It doesn't, I'm not even like saying like, oh, every character needs to, but it's like, it's not brought up at all.
Right. I'm agreeing with you. It's not something that necessarily needs to be explored and be a focus, you know, can dedicate a scene per chapter until the rest of the end of the series doing this. I'm just saying, even a throwaway line would have been reassuring in that case. Because, like you said, yeah, there is no confirmation that everything's going to be okay. And so, depending on your mindset, and your level of cynicism, then you could very well interpret, well, there's no guarantee of a happy ending for these people. And maybe that is the point. Maybe, because maybe there's not supposed to be a note of, you know, everything's going to be okay now. It would be nice to have that reassurance after what you put me through, though.
Yeah, well, it's even if that was the point, though, it's still like a anti-point in a way, because there's still no real suggestion that's even what the series is kind of going for. You know, if you're gonna end it on that note that everybody's seeming to get closure for what happened when they were kids and they're moving on, you know, it's good to also note, like, hey, you know, this stuff doesn't really end here. It's not like one good group powwow kind of ended all that angst and concern.
And by the way, why don't Nishimiya and Nishida get together and have kids? God damn it. I want a happy ending.
Why isn't Pedro in the series more? I wanted more of the Brazilian stepdad or brother-in-law.
Pedro was the only of his sister's boyfriend that had his back. He was cool.
The only other one we met beat the shit out of him.
Because what an asshole that dick was. Just because Ishida beat up his little brother.
So, I mean, look, guys, I think the ending still has a lot of good merits to it. I'm not, you know, saying anything bad about it or anything. I'm not saying I needed the ending to have every piece of closure. I didn't need to know where they go step by step through life. I think it just would have been nice to have noted that within the series at some point. It's just the thing on my end. I still really like this series overall. I don't love it as much as I think some people do, but, you know, that might just be because I have small, you know, quibbles here and there about it, but I still can recognize it's a fantastically written series. There are great characters in it. The emotional moments in it are just, you know, like, they can punch you in the gut, and then some scenes they'll rip your heart out, and then some scenes they'll just make you laugh. You know, it's a very good series of kind of hooking you. It's fast. It's easy to read. I enjoyed it. And there's some stylistic choices, you know, the X's over the face or that chapter that's primarily done as though how Nishimiya herself talks. It's brilliant. They were just fantastic chapters. So all that stuff, I think, is really well done. So again, if you're into dramas, if you're into that sort of stuff, absolutely go check this series out. It's a great recommendation.
It's got a really great mix of characters that encompass a pretty broad array of different issues. And also, you know, some that are just kind of normal.
Yeah, Sahara we didn't talk about. She's the one person, like, you definitely don't need therapy. Like, you were barely involved in this.
She's got her own hang-ups and stuff, but they're in a very relatable, normal way. Mm-hmm. Because she was like, you know, oh, I could have, you know, really helped out Nishimiya, and I have guilt over that. But she's not crippled by it. She just kind of quietly is like, I'm just going to try and be a better person. I'm going to try and be better tomorrow than I was today, and I'm going to try and do that in every aspect of my life, and the way I treat people, and the way I work on my skills and stuff. And she's the one that you feel the least worried about by the end of it. So that's kind of what, I mean, that's kind of why I skipped over her. She definitely does still have issues, but there's a great moment where she gets mocked because she's wearing heels and she's not used to wearing heels, and she says, I'm wearing them so that I'll get used to wearing them. You know, she's not concerned with the way that she is now. She's just trying to improve herself, and that's a really admirable thing. And that's what I like about the cast in general, is there are all these different relatable characters at different ends of things, and it's understandable why they don't quite all get together. It's because they're so different, and communication's important. It's very effective series in terms of conveying that.
Absolutely.
Now, with that said, I did not fail to communicate, but I did fail to read Black Clover ahead of time for this week. Let's hit the recap portion with the manga recap for Nick's first ever blind read-through of Black Clover.
Ooh, this is exciting.
Page 64, the pointlessly direct fireball and the wild lightning. One of those is a much better name than the other. I'm the wild lightning, and I'm the pointlessly direct fireball.
Why would you call yourself that?
So, Luck and Magna are facing off against Beat's Magic Dude, as they were at the end of the last chapter. They're both very beaten up, but Luck is still very excited about the battle, and he's like, oh, come on, beat us up some more. And Men is like, you dick Luck. Why would you say something like that? You're going to get me killed. And also you, I guess. Luck manages to actually counter one of Beast Magic Guy's attacks and land a blow on him. But he doesn't do really any damage. So the Beast Magic Guy says, oh, you know, good job managing to match my pace. You've got some pretty good speed. But still, Luck didn't manage to do anything to him. And at that moment, we get a flashback from Magna's perspective from when they first met in the Black Bulls. And Luck doesn't appear to have changed remotely.
His hair got longer. Or shorter. He grew up a little bit. His neck seems longer in current day.
But Magna was going for his weird hairstyle, but it was only, like, just starting off. Honestly, I think it looks better in the flashback than it does now. Because it's not quite as goofy. Luck did a joy buzzer gag with him. Like, they shook hands, and then Emu just shocked him with his electric magic. Like, well. And apparently Magna had, they had a little bit of difficulty getting along because Luck was kind of doing his own thing. But Magna admits to himself, but out of all of them, you know, you were the one that I guess wanted to match up with.
Yeah, he's, you know, even though you were tough and annoying, I respected you, and I always wanted to be as good as you were, essentially.
And, so, then we get the same flashback from Luck's perspective, which is that, from the first time that he saw him, you know, he didn't think very much of him, but my instincts warned me, this guy's gonna be interesting. Parentheses, dangerous. So he kept on, he basically deliberately messed with Magna so that Magna would be pushed in order to be an interesting opponent for him. And as a result of that, Magna was his first friend in the Black Bulls because of that weird relationship that they had. And so that relationship pushes them to kind of push each other in this battle with the Beast Magic Guy. But then we cut away, because to Asta and Kyato, Kyato explains his dance magic for a bit, and he says, yes, I put myself in a trance, and when I'm like that, my opponent can't predict my moves. And Asta goes, and Kyato says, what the fuck are you doing? And Asta says, I'm going into a trance. Kyato doesn't respond to this, because that's the best way to deal with Asta's stupidity. He detects Luck and Magna's magics, and Asta's like, okay, well, that's Magna and Luck. Well, those two are crazy, but when it comes right down to it, they're super reliable. They won't die. Cut to their corpses now. They are, however, in bad shape, lying on the ground with Beast Magic Guy, just looming over them. He's conjured these giant claws of magic, and he says, ah, you see, the weak get eaten, and despair, it's all that's left to them. But Luck and Magna stand up again, bleeding all over, and they say, well, if we ever despaired, then we would be too embarrassed to ever like Asta's superiors again. You see, when Poochie's not on screen, everyone should be asking, where's Poochie? Shouldn't they be thinking of Yami at a time like this? And how he'll kill them if they don't live up to his expectations? Like, he was the last guy that, you know, they heard from. They haven't been thinking about Asta this entire time. They've been thinking about each other. And now it's like, but Asta's the most important! Anyway.
Not much of a thing.
They charge ahead and combine magics simultaneously together, and there's a huge discharge of power as they both connect with Beast Magic Guy. And on the next page, he's blocked it. That's it.
Yeah,
He
made a big, like, beast fists. I love Annalisa's explanation. Honestly, I let her each chapter in this series while thinking of how Nick will respond to it.
Oh, God. He's made two giant fists in order to block their attacks. And Beast Magic Guy says, "You are just magics. Even when given a chance, that's the best you can do. Take this, the despair called death." But Asta jumps in and is like, "Now the important character is here, and so I will fight you." He blocks the attack, and it's his anti-magic sword, so he just, shrugs it off. And Beast Magic Guy says, "This is a good opportunity. I'll give you several times the pain you gave Leashed, just like these maggots at my feet." And Asta says, "They're not maggots. They're part of my team. And as their junior, I'll pick up their duty and take you down." And he draws his other sword and slashes it in the same motion.
So, I liked what this chapter started to a lot, actually. I like the kind of duality of Magna and Luck both kind of thinking back to the same memories and, independently thinking about how one another inspires him to move forward. It's a very shonen rival relationship that we, discover Zoro. They have.
Zoro and Sanji, kind of.
Yeah, and it makes sense because, these are two young male characters who both have, similar kind of magic styles, both very, like, battle, kind of, obviously battle-focused magics, lightning magic and fire magic. Like, you can't get any more, like, shonen battle obvious than that. So it's two characters who we've also seen a bit about, and seeing their relationship, it does kind of make sense why one another finds the other inspiring. Magna's like, "I'm intimidated by you, but I won't let you get ahead of me. I'm always going to jump up to you." And Luck saying, like, "Ooh, you seem dangerous, so I want to bring that out of you, and I need to keep, making sure I'm always a step ahead." So the way that they push each other, I think, was very cool, and I liked it as just a little bit of a touch to further develop the Black Bulls. The only thing that's obviously unnecessary is the fact that in this moment where they both feel despair or it looks like things have gotten rough on them, that they think to Asta, and it's how they feel that they disappoint Asta is why they get up and make another attack. I don't want to harp on, like, the Asta thing. Honestly, it only bothers me because it just doesn't make any sense. Like, there's no reason for them to think about Asta in this. Like, if as you said, Yami, even if they had to go with someone else, would make more sense. They don't want to disappoint their captain who they know is watching this. But I think it would have made more sense if when they got up, they both, like, "I don't want to disappoint him."
He's referring right to each here. Other. Right. It started off with them thinking about their relationship with each other, and that helped give them the motivation to keep fighting. And then when they were pushed to their limit, it was like, Asta. Yes,
it's
Asta.
The issue with it is that
it really negates the building of the relationship at the beginning of the chapter.
Yeah, and it's also something that kind of, like, look, he's not Christ. He's not. I'm not saying, like, Asta's too perfect. I'm not trying to go on that or anything like that. I'm just saying it makes the world feel small when every character's motivation seems to be their relationship with Asta, who's someone they honestly haven't known for that long. Like, it actually would have felt a little bit more impactful if, they had kept it to being Magna and Luck inspire each other. I know Asta's important to them, so I don't mind that he comes in at the end to save. I mean, fuck, who else was going to actually legitimately fight this guy if Yami couldn't get involved? Like, I'm not, crazy enough for that. It just felt like an odd decision to put that in there when so much of the rest of the chapter was devoted to bringing these two and building their rivalry with one another.
Well, it's okay, Chris, because next chapter, Asta will go, "You use beast magic, huh?" And then he'll go, "Rawr! Now I can use beast magic." And everything will be okay.
I'm going to tell you what's going to actually happen next chapter, Nick. he's going to go into an actual trance so that he's able to then make his moves unpredictable and uncounterable, and that's how he's going to beat the Beast Magic Guy.
You're probably right.
I'm actually confident, I feel like I'd put money on it.
At least Rebecca's not going to be there.
Well, yeah, well, that's just not an important character. She's not going to come back.
I think we missed our quota last week, so...
I try not to put it in every week, Nick. Only when it's relevant.
Well, I'm pretty sure I didn't do my Unohana last week, so...
Yeah.
Speaking of which, it's time for Bleach! 676 Horn of...
Salvation.
Sorry, the title got randomly shoved over in his cloak.
It's like someone was typing in, Horn of... Oops, tap. I didn't mean to put that. Eh, fuck it. Backspace is so far away. But...
Salvation. Horn of Salvation. Like,
why is that large space there? There's nothing in the middle.
So you know what's great about Yuhabak's new palace, Chris?
Yes.
Is that it's just similar enough to Las Noches that Kubo doesn't have to do backgrounds.
He's like, everything behind them is white!
So, yeah... This chapter opens, you know, Ichigo, of course, did his stupid-looking new transformation last week, and Rihime is reacting to it because she recognizes, oh, you know, he looks really similar in a lot of ways to that, you know, horrible, monstrous hollow form he had before, so she's worried if he's going to be in control or not, and so he turns around and he's like, it's okay, anyway, you know.
Yeah, what up, bae?
It's...
I like it. See,
smile in that form, just like... makes it even worse.
It looks dorky. It doesn't look good, but I like that Ichigo, for once, actually seems like he's having fun in a fight. Like, normally his fight's always so dour and just like, I can't lose control, I have to fight you! And I know this is the big fight in the series, but it's just nice to see Ichigo in a fight smiling and in control. Like, so much of the series has been like, this isn't even my power that's beating you! Oh, the angst! And it's, I don't know, I just found it refreshing for once, even if he looks like a really,
I do appreciate the note
demon.
I do appreciate the note of Ichigo stopping to reassure Rihime. Because Ichigo is supposed to be all about, you know, defending his friends and so on and so forth. I fight for my friends kind of thing. And a lot of the times his fights do not seem to remember that. He just, you know, kind of charges in with his sword like he did with Yuhabak. And like you said, a lot of angst-driven stuff. So him stopping, like, okay, Arihime is here. The last time that I did this, I wasn't myself. So, you know, everything's okay. And he explains to Yuhabak that, you know, this is, you know, the combination of, you know, the Quincy power I inherited from my mother, manifested by old man Zangetsu, and the hollow inside me mixed with the Soul Reaper power I got from my dad. While they maintained equilibrium by opposing each other, they were forged together as Zangetsu into these two swords. If that equilibrium made him behave himself, then tipping the balance should bring him out. And in the past, when I was struck by huge amounts of Soul Reaper hollow powers, he took over. Is that really what happened? I always thought it was just you got really mad. Whatever, it's
fine. Yeah, I have no clue what the half of this shit means.
Yeah, so... he explains that, you know, in order to pull this out, basically, I, you know, used some of your Quincy power because I'm not quite adept at combining their power together. So, he used hacks. He cheated a little bit. He stole from Yuhabak's pile so that he could have his own.
Yeah.
And then he moves around the Rihime's barrier, and Rihime's like, when did he get in front of it? Oh, Ichigo, move fast! Call the presses! He never moves fast! It's not like he's got, like, two different techniques before this one that let him move fast! Come on. Anyway. Ichigo warns Rihime to get back, and then he starts releasing his power, and there's huge blast of energy, and so Yuhabak says, "Oh, such magnificent power!" And he draws his sword as well. Ichigo dashes in really, really quickly and stops him from completely pulling his sword out, and then slashes his sword as well. But and the swing of his sword causes the building behind them to start to collapse, but Yuhabuk has caught the blade, which means it should probably not have actually... whatever. Anyway, but Yuhabuk's like, oh, did you really think you could take me down with this? And I guess he throws Ichigo away. I can't tell, because Bleach never uses big panels where it should. But Ichigo starts to prepare what looks like Getsuga Tensho, but Yuhabuk mocks him, saying, it's the same thing! I won't! And then he's like, no, wait a minute, that's not it. And he realizes that Ichigo is actually combining Getsuga Tensho with a Grand Ray Cero! And Ichigo swings his sword, and it looks like Yuhabuk's been bisected, but probably not!
See, I don't understand half of Bleach's terms anymore, and I've been playing a lot of Overwatch, so when this final, like, attack happened, I just imagined Ichigo essentially is, like, screaming out, like, the Hanzo ultimate sound, like, he's like, Riku, I got took him off! It's like, alright, some big dragon attack energy thing comes out and does that? Because I don't understand what this energy thing means more than another one. This is the one the Hollows use, right?
Ceros are the regular energy attack that Hollows spit out. A Grand Ray Cero was demonstrated by some of the Espada. Basically, it's a really big Cero.
Okay.
That's about it. So, parts of this chapter I honestly do like. It's nice to finally see Ichigo just fucking using powers and fighting. As opposed to, and now he'll fight these four women that beat up Zaraki. Well, enough of that. He's got to go back up the way he came. And of course, you know, you got to have moments like this where it seems like the good guy has gotten one up on the bad guy by, you know, using some new unexpected technique. But most likely, Yuhabuk's going to be fine because he hasn't used the true power of the Almighty yet. My main problem is just. Ichigo still looks stupid. He starts to look a bit better in that very final panel, where it looks like he's getting more hollow energy and there's more darkness surging around him. But when it's just like, I'm Ichigo and I've got a little bit of face paint on and there's this one doofy horn sticking out, it's like, no. But that's it. That's it for the chapter.
Do you want me to do the recap for Boruto then?
Oh yeah, that one. I was going to get water while we discussed Fairy Tail, but I have less to say about Boruto, so I'll be right back.
So this is Boruto, Naruto: The Next Generation, Chapter 2, The Training Begins, and I'm gonna kind of breeze through this one a little bit. Essentially, last time Boruto was like, Sasuke, train me, could you? Super cool, and my dad sucks. And so Sasuke starts this one by being like, can you do the Rasengan? And Boruto's like, no, but give me a day and I'll do it. And he runs off. We get a flashback, which is like, oddly, like six straight pages of no dialogue, just pure action. It was kind of interesting. It also helped to make it a lot easier to kind of get through this chapter. Essentially, it just shows that Sasuke was fighting a couple people, and he's like, oh, you're from the same clan as Kaguya, which is something I think we pretty much already knew about. Cutaway, Boruto asks Konohamaru to help teach him the Rasengan, and we get a little bit of a small training arc where Boruto's kind of like, no, I want to be better! You show me it right away! He's like, no, it takes time and patience. He's like, ugh! So he manages to make just a very tiny Rasengan. But he manages to do that in a day. And everyone's like, that's super impressive. Except Boruto, who's like, no! It needs to be bigger than that, or Sasuke will never train me! And
well,
he literally...
Sasuke makes this kind of offhand remark about how small it is.
Yeah, he says to him, like, oh, it's kind of small. And Boruto throws it in anger, then runs away. And Sonata comes down, and she's like, well, you shouldn't have said that to him. I mean, it's pretty tough you made it even that far, you know. And Sasuke's like, neither of you have let me finish. I was going to say he could become my student. Like, That's still impressive. Boruto's just a shit who ran away before I could finish my sentence.
I like Sarada's, like, appearances in this chapter, because it seems as though, because she's really excited, and it seems as though it's like, oh, you know, her teammate is finally getting serious about training, so she's really excited about it. You know, she wants to have, like, actual competition from, I guess, her friend over this. And, you know, at the end also, when they're accepted, they're applying for the exam, she's excited that he's going to be a part of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, well, you know, I've grown to like Sarada, and so seeing her, you know, not being a depressed little Uchiha, it makes me happy.
It is nice. Boruto then goes into the scientist area and finds, like, a douchey scientist who essentially gives him, like, a cheating device to make a bigger Rasengan. And Boruto takes that so he can be like, sweet, now I can make a super Rasengan and I'll super impress Sasuke. And Sasuke is like, that is impressive. You're quite different from your father, though.
Yeah, well, there's a great moment because he notices the device hidden in Boruto's sleeve. Mm. He doesn't say anything about that much. He's like, oh, you advanced that much, huh? And Boruto says, I'm not like my dad when it comes to talent. Yes. And Sasuke just says, yeah, you're right.
You're very different.
Really different from Naruto. And I really like that moment. Because you can tell how disappointed he really is.
So I'd hope that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
He's like, what?
Because Bolt's a little shit.
Yeah, he's like, fine, you could be my student. And he starts telling him, you know, like, they're, I guess, hanging out, eating food, and Boruto asks him, like, hey, what was my dad like? And Sasuke kind of, again, it's kind of a nice moment where Sasuke kind of explains to him what Naruto is like, but he explains to him more about his dad when he was younger, and talking about how he was annoying, he was a bumbling fool, he was all these things, but, you know, you shouldn't be studying who your dad is today. You should want to know who he was in the past. Don't care about your dad, the Hokage. What's important about him, and what you should really be learning from him, is who he was when he was your age, kind of thing. And I like that moment. It's Sasuke trying to impart a smart lesson, but Boruto's just like, oh! Could you tell me my dad's weakness? Is it water? Can I throw water at him?
Can I just spray it in a little bottle like I would at a cat?
Basically just get a couple kind of shots around of the new Team 7, like, showing off their tuning exam entrance form. They're all going to be competing together, and blah, 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 blah. Then we get our villain group, and they killed fucking Killer B. The end.
I was like, no!
I don't think he's going to be fully dead, and I guess this is something the movie already covered, but it just annoyed me that it's like, offhand in the last two pages, like, of the fucking chapter, not given much attention of Killer B's, like, body dropping to the ground. I was like, what the fuck?
There are honestly parts of this chapter that I did really like. It is just hard to get behind so much of it because, like, God, Bolt, you little asshole! God damn it, you piece of shit!
I'll tell you what. Boruto, if nothing else, is making me appreciate Asta more and more as a protagonist, because at least every time Asta does something annoying, I can be like, at least he's not fucking Boruto. Holy shit. Alright. So, let's move on to Fairy Tail then. Fairy Tail chapter 488, The Two of Us, Always. So last time, Gojo had defeated Bradman and his anti-magic particles, but Bradman, in the last moment, was like, you're coming with me! And tries to drag him into, I guess, sort of like an explosion, like kind of the, or implosion, I don't know, a big portal of anti-magic particles of death.
He goes full Andross.
Yeah.
He's if like, I go down, I'm taking you with me!
Exactly. So, Gojo's like, no, I can't get out of this. And they're like, oh, this is a portal to the afterlife. From here, there is no return. So, Revy is like, I'm going to help you. I'm going to save you. And Gojo's like, no, don't. You know, if you touch me, my entire body's made of anti-magic particles. You'll die. And he's like, I don't care.
The vortex too, probably. Yeah.
And she's like, I don't care. I came to save you and I will. And Gojo, like, literally, like, throws shackles to kind of, like, stick her to a wall so she can't move forward. And it's a cool moment where she's like, You're not dealing with the same levy as before. And she starts writing her magic script with her leg and creates like a sword that she just cut through the rock. And that's how she escapes it.
Cool little moment.
And I like it because immediately as soon as that, Gajeel reacts and Lily Panther comes out of behind her and just bear hugs her and just holds her as she's screaming like, no, let me go. I had to save him. And Lily Panther's like, I'm so sorry about this, but I can't. You'll get sucked into. So Gajeel's, being sucked into the portal at the very end here, and he's like, Levy, I really used to be the worst kind of trash. And then I met you, and because of you, I might be a better man, at least a little, because you taught me how to love another person. And you made me start thinking about all the other kinds of stuff I thought of in my, I never thought of in my life, like the future, family, happiness.
He imagines their kids!
And a tiny, I guess that's just regular Lily Panther just shrunk down. And he's like, ain't that a laugh? Me, wanting to be like everybody else. I wanted the two of us to walk together, always. And he says, I'm leaving my future to you, Lily Panther. Make sure she gets back to the guild. And, Lily Panther's last words, I'm like, oh, she'll get there. And he disappears into the portal. Levy screams out Gajeel's name. And we cut away to Actinologia.
Now, if this had been the entire chapter, it would have been like, well, that sucks. I mean, I'm sure that he's okay, because it's fairy tale, but pretty effective sequence. You bought into it because of how effective the previous chapter was, and also just being invested in their relationship. And this little bit here is also fine.
Yeah,
it's at the end where I just go, God damn it!
Well, because we cut over to Actinologia, who's like six left until every dragon's been slain. So he sensed that Gajeel is presumably dead. At which point, Irina shows up, and she's like, oh, you are quite powerful. And he's like, if you know that, why are you here? She's like, oh, I know, but I think I will be a challenge to you. And we cut away again, this time back to the conversation between August and Brandish. And
by the way, they never bothered to shrink Happy back down, so he's just looming over all.
He's just an enormous tower of fucking cat. They continue their kind of argument. Last time, August was just like, I follow my majesty's orders. The fact that you're even questioning this shows that you've betrayed us. And, Brandish like explained, like, look, you understand, this is just a war of, like, ideologies. You know what's going to happen. This is just going to be Xerath eliminating everybody. And what's the point of that? August has a pretty good response. He's like, I will leave the aftermath to my majesty. I'm not fucking here to argue with it. I follow his orders. Brandon's like, no, I don't think these people are evil. August, at least try talking to them. And August stops and he's like, well, okay. Because it's you, I'll give it a shot. At which point, Brandon's just like, thanks, Grandpa August. I'll take it out a knife and stab you because you're the one person I've always wanted to kill! And everyone's like, what happened? And we cut over
it. It's actually a really brutal thing because she doesn't just stab him with a knife.
She
throws the knife as she's stabbing him with it.
Yeah.
Really cool use of her powers.
And we cut over to Mest, who's like, Eargh!
And Natsu says what I'm thinking, which is, what the hell are you doing?
He's like, I planted a memory in her that August was someone that she had to kill. Why? And to protect the guild!
He goes, I did it for the guild.
And everyone's like, what the fuck, you Mest? Dumb piece of why are you a thing? Why are you still a thing?
And so August goes, well, clearly these people are fucking evil. And he's just glowing with black magic, and Brandish is like, what the hell did I just do? And the chapter ends with, well, now the fucking most powerful wizard aside from Xerath and the Rose is going to kill them all.
Fucking...
It's just like, Mest, what were you doing? He talked him down.
You're the worst thing. You're the worst part of Fairy Tale. Why?
What are you fucking
Everything doing? You've done, everything that's happened about you is dumb as shit.
Master Spark K in the chat, you messed up. Yeah, that about sums it up. He fucking did. What is he doing? It's like, okay. I know it's because you had to have them fight August and actually fight him. But what the fuck, man?
Such a shitty reason for it, too. It's not even like he was suggestively saying a threat, and that's when he did it. He's like, he dropped his guard down suddenly. Time to kill the most powerful wizard known to man!
It's like,
with a knife to the chest! That'll do it!
Not even in terms of this was not a very well thought out plan. Because, by the way, it wasn't. I'll just have someone he trusts stab him all of a sudden. Clearly this will definitely work on the person whose scope of power I have no idea of.
I can't even comprehend how fucking absurdly powerful this thing is.
But also, you're supposed to be one of the good guys!
It's a very evil moment from him. Like, even his face is clearly sinister. But, like, he gives this reasoning that's supposed to be like, but it's for the guild!
I did it for the guild. Jesus Christ! Oh, God. Oh. I think that we have, I'm pretty sure that we have one of our, like, you know, yearly rewards for, like, worst plan or something like that. Something like that. Mesa's gonna make a list somehow in terms of worst moments that he encountered. This was terrible.
I'll put an idea on here. Worst idea of the year. All messed.
No other nominees will be accepted. Let's move over to Food Wars. Chapter 169, rematch. Last time, after Erina spilled her guts to Soma, Soma offered to cook Yukihira style for her again. But we begin with a flashback to Senzaemon and Joichiro Saiba meeting up, I believe, before the end. Yes, before the beginning of the school year, actually. I'm not really sure when that happened. Okay.
It was before Soma went into school.
That was what happened. Okay. It was a little bit into the school year, but still quite a ways ago. So, they talk for a little bit about things that are going on. And, Joichiro brings up, you know, I didn't really want Soma to come here, you know, but you kept on bothering me about it. They actually get to the point of his visit, which is he's learned that a zombie is up to something. And he just says, the source is reliable, I trust it. He doesn't say what the source was, which might end up playing an important thing later. I don't know. But Senzaemon expresses really deep concern for Erina because of, you know, fear of him is still deeply, deeply rooted in her heart. And I expect he will take full advantage of that to once again make her his. So he's trying to think about what they should do in order to counteract this, but Joichiro just says, whatever we adults do, it won't be enough to fix the problem, not at its root. I'm thinking the only ones who can truly save your granddaughter will be those she lived and competed with this entire time, her friends and classmates in Soma's class. And then we cut to the present, where Soma is getting ready. Hisako is still panicking, which amuses me deeply for some reason. Just going around like, where is she? She's bringing this up to people, and she's like, I don't know where she is! Maybe she's been kidnapped by a zombie who's being carted away as we speak! And then Megumi is just like, well, it sounds like she's in Soma's room. What?! I forgot that they had established this a long-ass time ago, but they have those old school speaking valves that they have in some really old buildings. I don't know what the exact name for them is, but it's the kind of pipe that you
old timey speaky brassy things.
Old timey speaky brassy tube things. Pretty much all of the girls in the frickin' dorm just crowd around this thing to overhear what's going on as Soma gets ready. And Erina is expressing doubts over Soma's ability to actually do this. She says, I mean, you don't even know his recipes. And Soma's like, nope! He says, like, yeah, it's okay, though. I know all of his techniques, so this will be a genuine Yukihira dish. I'll serve up one of my specialties. And all the girls who are listening in are like, oh, no. He's going to serve one of his gross experiments to her. And a bunch of them have, you know, like, oh no, she's not going to be able to take it because of her incredibly refined palate.
It might kill her.
It literally... It may just taste so horrible it kills her. And more people are starting to crowd around the Valp, too, talking about the tempura rice bowl that he's going to make.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to make a tempura rice bowl. And everyone's like, oh, that sounds kind of normal. And then Bun Girl's like, but he didn't say what kind. Who knows what it could be? And there's just a shot of a bowl with the contents, like, mosaiced out. Like, it's shit or, like, something perverted you can't see. Like, it's a crime scene, like, we blurred out this for the safety of young viewers.
It's such a horrible graphic scene that we had to center out the dish. But Megumi actually says, it'll be okay. I'm sure there's something someone's trying to get across to Nikiri, and he's going to do that through his cooking. Everything will be fine. I just know it. And everyone's like, oh, Megumi. But it's not really reassuring to hear that from the person that has had to taste the most of his dishes.
Who's been fooled by his cooking so much.
Just like suffer Stockholm Syndrome from tasting his cooking. I do like their noting of that detail. I completely forgot that she tends to be his guinea pig.
I thought it was very funny.
But we get a little bit of a montage of, Soma preparing different items for the dish. And Erin is watching him, and she thinks to herself, you know, you had the same look on your face that day, too. Day you challenged Eishi Tsukasa, despite the enormity of the barrier you were attempting to hurdle, the look on your face was as if cooking was so much fun you could hardly contain yourself. And when I was still a child, I felt the same, but she just has this long flashback explanation of she's had perfection drilled into her so much that deep down inside, I don't think cooking is very fun at all.
I love this flashback, too. I like the way it starts, like, a shot of her and Alice's kids, like, smiling as they look over some food.
With their little pigtails, because their hair is tied up, and their
little aprons and shit.
Gathered around a cooking pot, and they look so happy together. And
then it hard cuts to the most, like, unintimate setting of just food, long stretched across the table, with her sullenly looking over with, like, darkness, like, raining down behind her, and all these shadowy adults who are just like, you have to do this, it's the name. You've been born with such a gift, so you must try all of this food. Oh, you're so much better than everyone else. And, you know, hard cut back to Alice being super excited, and her just like, I don't even fucking know anymore.
Yeah, you know, Alice saying, like, you know, we're gonna get to Totsuki, and I love cooking so much, so, you know, getting to, you know, get better at it is gonna be so much fun, but we're going to be rivals when we get there, so I'm not going to go easy on you, so we have to both give it our best. And he's like, yeah, okay, right. And then we cut all the way back to the present, because the sad memories are making her expression fall. So someone says, hey, what's with that face, Nikiri? You know, for you to act all bossy and stuck up, sometimes you get like that. And it's time for you to shape up. After all, right now, I finally got my chance at a rematch since that first time you tried my cooking. And that has me more excited than you'd believe. And we go all the way back to, like, the second and third chapter when she rejected his cooking and said it was bad. And he says, today's the day I finally make you say loud and clear that you think my cooking is good. And he finishes up the dish and presents her a bowl with the rice tempura, and he says, alright, it's done, dig in. I do like ending the chapter on that note of this is what Soma's thinking. You know, he, of course, recognizes that Erina needs this to not be, you know, all sad and depressed and stuff. But in the end, he's kind of a selfish person. He's doing this for his own self-satisfaction. This is his chance at revenge, and that's why what the chapter title comes from, is this is what he thinks of as his chance at revenge, really. So yeah, a really nice chapter. I'm sure the next one is going to have a long explanation of the dish, so having a character focus in this one, I think, was really nice.
It's a fine chapter. It's, you know, one of those ones. It has some really good character moments that I like seeing. The flashback with, I always forget his name, Joichiro,
yeah.
It's nice seeing that, because it adds a little bit more context into perhaps why Sanzaemon, when things first got, you know, developed, he turned to Soma first instead of like someone like Alice. Like, this adds because a little bit more context.
Yeah,
like,
that's why
he's gonna need that classmate. So it's nice to get that. It's just a shame though, because this, you know, spoilers. This is a week where not a lot happened in Jump, to be completely honest. And this was, right. You know, another chapter that ends with like, next week things will be interesting. Like, all right, you know, this is a good chapter. It's just, I want the development, and that's what's going to come next week.
Okay.
Oh, we need to hurry up, Nick. You're not going to have no time to watch any NXT.
My Hero Academia.
I heard they just had the best match ever. Versus Alicia Fox. I don't know.
93, Ember of One for All.
Oh, this is a short chapter where nothing happens.
Nothing happens
on this.
This one. Great, awesome thing going on here, honestly. We have a flashback to begin things with. Basically, Toshinori remembering Nana. And her advice, which was, you know, when you feel that you're at your limit, you just remember why you swing those fists. I'm talking about where you started. That's what you need to recall in order to push yourself that much further past your limit. Toshinori recalls that when he was basically first starting off, he said he wanted to make the world a place where everyone can live with a smile. And for that, the world needs a symbol. So he just wanted to become that symbol, and we cut to the present where he's still got that one bulked up arm and the rest of his body is frail and weak. But he's still standing there, still fighting, and Gran Torino is basically beaten and broken and can only watch, and he's thinking, oh, he's had to counter so many massive attacks. He's gone so far past his limit. His body is unstable. He can only keep his right arm muscled up like this. Jesus Christ, you know. And All for One is completely confident. And he says, oh, well, this is going to be your last punch, isn't it? Wounded heroes are always the scariest. After I ripped your guts out, the look on your face when you charged at me, I still see it in my dreams sometimes. Then again, you'll probably let loose a few desperate punches, so I should prepare myself. But at that moment, suddenly Endeavor appears, shooting fire and shit. And Endeavor is encouraging All Might from far away. And there's honestly a really cool moment, a flashback from Endeavor's perspective, where he thinks, you know, he knew that he could never actually reach All Might. And that was why he had Todoroki.
Like, he knows, so, like, all this, I did all this just to beat you. But the gap between us was so large, and that despair is what led me to, and he just thinks Todoroki and his wife. He's like, explain to me why you're like this, because, you know, I didn't go through this for you to look so pathetic right now.
Are you really the man I've been chasing all this time, basically?
Yeah.
The Edge hero guy, the one that can send out strands of his body and stuff, also jumps in as well. He interferes a little bit in the fight. Kami Woods as well. And Kami Woods manages to get basically all of the wounded heroes to safety. Mount Lady and Best Genist and Orca Gangster Guy.
Gotta save him. It's kind of cool. You'd see Tiger there. He's saving the woman who was trapped. So he's like, you know, don't worry. You don't have to protect her anymore. We're here to ease your burden. So do it, because we're all rooting for you. It's an awesome moment where all the heroes are kind of working together to motivate All Might, like, do it, because we're going to support you. Be the hero that you're always going to be.
And then we get a flashback from Gran Torino's perspective of the conversation he had with Nana, which was like, oh, so you've chosen, you know, that Toshinori guy in order to be your... what's the fucking term? Successor. That's
yes.
It. And so Nana explains, yeah, you know, he says the crime is not going to go down because the people don't have anyone to rely on. The country has no pillar to support it, and so he says he's going to be that pillar. And now he's basically being that pillar now. Everyone has pinned all of their hopes on him winning, and we get this huge montage of all the people watching the fight unfold. cheering
screaming.
On. Yeah, cheering on Toshinori, who's still looking almost completely broken. And all of a sudden, All for One just goes, "What a pain! Spirit this, hope that. Wake up, this is reality. Spring-like limbs kinetically boosted by 4, and the strength enhanced by 3, a multiplier, hypertrophy, rivets, airwalk, spear-like bones, the shockwaves up until now were just meant to wear you down. Not much oomph, though. In order to really kill you, I'll be hitting you with my ultimate quirk combination. Here it comes."
Terrifying.
Turns his arm into this monstrous thing.
Yeah.
It's one huge fist with, like, rocks and gems.
Other arms.
More arms, like, hanging off it. It's like drills and stalagmites and all this stuff. This horrifying thing. So, All Might's got his one muscled arm, and All for One has got his one thinged arm. And so he's thinking to himself as he charges in with his, you know, quirk combination, "Trading blows with you earlier was enough to finally confirm my suspicions. You no longer possess One for All. What you're using now is the after effects, mere dregs, the ember that remained after the transfer. And that ember gets dimmer every time you draw on it. A weak little flicker that doesn't even need blowing out. It'll soon die on its own. Izuku Midoriya, he was the recipient, right? He came to you completely unqualified. He still can't even control it, can he? You've got plenty to regret as you die, All Might, because you've also failed as a teacher." I love All for One. Such an evil fucking monster. It's got some great lines, though. And they clash fists, and suddenly, mentally, All for One just mentally announces impact recoil. All your power is going to come crashing back on you. Basically, he saved up this one quirk in order to just blast it back with all of his remaining strength as he's releasing it. But Toshinori says, "You know, you're right. As a teacher, I have definitely fallen short, and I'm willing to accept that."
One thing to just note, he destroyed Toshinori's arm. He literally, like, eviscerated it to the elbow stump.
He torico'd him.
Yeah. He just blew it up, essentially.
And All for One is thinking to himself as, you know, All Might is continuing to fight back, "So pathetic. Your dying ember will go out all on its own, but still you struggle. Until your job on this earth is done, you'll keep it alive, struggling desperately to keep it going." And there's this mental image of a naked, shriveled up Toshinori just desperately hunched around the ember of One for All, trying to keep it alive in the middle of a blizzard. But Toshinori, of course, remembers Nana's words about, you know, "When you're at home, to remember this." And so Toshinori thinks, "I'm more than just the symbol. Just as my master was there for me, I've got to raise him right. So until then..." And All for One suddenly goes, "Oh, so you would stoop this low and struggle so unseemly. I miscalculated." As Toshinori's muscled up arm switches to his other arm.
Yeah.
And he fucking left hooks All for One right across the jaw.
And a great fucking shot. You can see, like, the sweeping arc of it coming from the bottom of the page. It just, like, knocks fucking All for One's face across.
And he just declares, "You know, until I raise him right, I can't die." Really cool chapter. Builds up to a really awesome climactic moment of this one huge punch. And I'm excited to see where this goes next.
It's fantastic. This is an amazing chapter. It really, you know, it's a moment that seemed like something bad's going to happen to All Might. And it looked like how absurdly powerful All for One was. So it seemed like this was going to be just like the villain's fucking absolute victory. But I love this moment where, you know, no matter what, you know, All Might saying, like, "I can't die because I need to be a mentor for Deku." And I thought that was such an awesome moment, and that's
my work isn't done yet.
Yeah.
So.
It's gonna be sad if he fucking dies at this point.
I'm not gonna do a full recap of Nisekoi, because we're gonna probably go long as it is. But basically the important stuff that happens is that Onodera, and I think Shiige, their memories getting jogged, and so they actually remember when they were kids. And it seems as though the promise that was made was Shiige promising to marry Raku. It was a very childlike thing, though, because they based it off the storybook that they had, and mostly it was just, they all knew each other as kids, and they were such great friends that they wanted to promise to see each other again. Well, the promise was fulfilled, so that's the most important thing. And then Shiige kind of filled in, you know, threw in, and I'm going to marry him. And I do like the final page, because it's all of the, you know, the other three girls reacting to her decoration, and Yui and Onodera are like, huh? And Marcus was like, no, he's mine! but yeah, that's really all I have to say about it. One Piece!
Honestly, you know, because we're running a little bit long, I think we can kind of... Now, hold on. Alright, no, I remember this. The thing that's stupid about this Nisekoi chapter is she doesn't say, we'll get married. She says, and then we'll all get married. As in, all of us. All four girls will get married. I'm telling you, it's leading up to a non-conclusion. They're going to find out both of their keys fucking open it, or none of the keys open it, and the real fucking message was the adventure. The real love they share was the adventures they shared together.
It wasn't about the destination, it was about the journey.
The real key is the love they grew for all of each other as friends this time. I think there'll be a conclusion, but I think the key locket thing.
God damn it.
Yeah, I think the lock and key thing is going to be bullshit. I'm really feeling strongly about that. As for One Piece, there really isn't that much to say about One Piece this week, so I think for the sake of time, we can kind of cut through a lot of this. Basically, we're just getting some more explanation. We see who Pudding is as a person a little bit. There's some humor, there's some fun with it. She explains...
It's cool to know because she and Sanji have actually seen each other.
They've met each other, they like each other, and she just notes, like, Sanji really liked me, but he notes... I need to go back to my crew. I can't marry you. And
which leads to a great joke because all the straws there are like, Sanji turned down a girl.
There's a lot of very good humor in it too. I also like there's a moment where they're like, we can't trust her. She's works for Big Mom. It's like, no, I think we can. And there's just a shot of Pedro like with a sword already at her throat. Like, what do you want me to do with her, Luffy?
I'm really liking Pedro. Honestly.
Yeah, the small bits are very funny. Basically, Pudding gives them, like, a guide to follow on how to get to Whole Cake Island secretly, and they kind of head off on that. They find a note that seems Peckham saying, like, turn back. And then we cut away to an island that's been at war for 2 years that the Germa 66 just entered in and ended immediately. And we see Sanji's two older brothers, I believe.
Mm-hmm. They're one and two, and he was probably be three. They also note how many kids Big Mom actually has. It's something like 80 or something like that, with a bunch of different fathers.
It's something massive.
And One Piece is going to be off next week, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a bummer because this isn't a great chapter to leave off on. Like, I'm not like, holy shit, what happens next? I'm like, no, let's do something more.
The feared Vince Smoke family is very strong. I get it.
They all look like Sanji. I thought, didn't we meet some of them before? But I suppose these are the big... two of the family, so they're the most significant ones. And they all have, like, fucking Cyborg 009 haircuts and shit like that to fit in with it. It's a good chapter. It's fun. I can't help but get the impression Pudding's not as nice as she seems. I think there's a heel turn coming up for her in the future. But, we'll...
She's gonna throw Sanji through the barbershop window!
Yeah, she's gonna fucking 3D him through a table when he's not looking. That bitch. But... It's a fine chapter, I suppose. Toriko. It's the only time I think we've ever spent through One Piece to get to Toriko.
I don't even know if I really have much to say about Toriko.
Toriko, it turns out...
There's a whole lot of details that I do skip through, honestly.
Toriko, turns out all the islands are secretly named for Pangaea because they were all one giant continent. The Dragon King is flying now, which I guess was one of the kings, but I didn't remember it. A bunch of people are about to have a fight. The other third member of the Toriko, Komatsu Chef Trio also has food luck, which I think we already kind of knew. Zara... Not Zero. What's the fucking big chef's name? Something with a Z. the big, tall, old-ass chef who was the number one. I forget his name. Oh, yeah. He's about to fight dude with a beer, General Uman, who was another member of the betraying group. Seos, that's the name.
Toriko fights off the despair he feels from being confronted by Neo Acacia by saying, like, Neo's gonna be my meat dish now.
Yeah.
And he's just like, eat me? I'll eat you!
He does. He fucking digs a fucking chunk out of it. And I like, his first demon is like, whoa, what are you doing? And the other demon's like, I fucking ate him!
But that's about it. Yes. World Trigger, chapter 146, Tamakoma 2, part 14. It's a recap of their battle.
Literally. And there is nothing else to this except explaining everything that just happened, like, in the past month.
Well, it's you know, a kind of typical, you know, now let's take a moment to analyze what's happened thing that they tend to do a lot in the Border Wars. There are little moments here and there that I do like.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I'm just saying, I'm like, nothing happens beyond them explaining what happened the past month, and I, for some reason, I'm still enraptured.
Tamakoma is congratulating each other, and Yuma's like, all right, yeah, we won. And he high-fives Osamu, yay! He double high-fives Chika, yay! And then Inusami just, like,
put arms around each other. Yay! Uh-oh, is this Nick disconnecting? No, but we were so close, Nick! Your NXT is so close! You're almost there! Alright, well, while Scott tries to get him reconnected, I'll just continue with this. Essentially, they explain what efforts, the commentary team, are explaining exactly kind of what gave the fight to Tamakoma, what tilted it in their favor. They explain basically the wire trick a little bit and how by doing so... Oh, are we back?
Hello.
There we go. No video.
Can you see me?
There we go. Oh, I can see you. Cool. I can't see me, but I just turn my... There we go. All right, we're good.
I was going to point out that they cut to Arashiyama's squad outside because of the remnants of the whole minor invasion. And Arashiyama is like, hey, it looks like Mikumo's team won with 7 points. And Nikito just goes, of course they did. It's like, well, yeah, I knew they would. Duh.
I taught Osama the spider. Of course they're going to win.
Just like, not even like, oh, I am proud of my student, or like, oh, I'm impressed. Just like, well, yeah, duh.
And I also love, you see Ninomiya's squad's like,
Well, because they're probably going to have to fight them again.
Yeah, because they fucking jump up. They go from like, I forget, they were like 8 or something like that, and now they're back up pack, to 4. Yeah.
So, most likely would have to go through, you're going to meet up with Ninomiya's team again soon. And once we're through with like all the commentators talking about stuff, we cut to Kakizaki's squad, and he's, you know, apologizing to his team. And so he's like, I'm sorry, you know, we stuck to our formation way too long. This one's on me. And it seems we're like, well, you know, I don't know. Because, I mean, if we had split up and just charged in without knowing about the lead bullets, we would have probably been caught anyway. And Teruya says, you know, that formation you have to stick to, that's our strength. So don't, you know, just say that you just abandon it. And all of them just start, you know, talking strategy while Kaki's just kind of looking on. And they're like, hey, come on, you're our captain. You know, talk with us about this. It's one of those things where it's like, it's a nice little bonding moment without having to have a big cry about stuff the way that Katori does later in the chapter. Let's see here. There is a conversation between Husei with Jin and, I've forgotten the kid's name. It'll come to me later. And Husei is kind of analyzing, you know, Yotaro. Yotaro's like, so did you get the trick that Osama used? And Husei says, well, that's only a guess, but it's probably actually the color of the wires. It's not just invisible and visible wires. There's probably a wide spectrum. So if someone only sees, like, oh, there's a red one, and then there are normally visible ones, then there are also ones that are barely visible that they're not going to be aware of. So it essentially, you know, makes the decoy even more effective. So if you can detect it and relax, you know, but that puts you in a slow pace, which actually helps out Osamu anyway. So, so he sums it all up by just saying, when both sides are not much different in capability, whoever's more prepared wins. That's all there is to it.
And that's what Osamu is good at, preparing.
But they also, basically everyone's like, oh, well, yeah, Tomoko's, you know, you've shown off a lot of cool tricks. They jump all the way up to number 4 in the rankings. That's it for all the matches. And then we cut to Katori Squad's room, where Katori is just going, I want to quit Border. Face down on the bed. Everyone's like, no, don't say that. We like you so much.
Huh. For some reason, her sleeves change color from the first panel to the rest.
Huh. Yeah, you're right.
Fuck World Trick. I'm done with this series now. This is horse shit. This isn't the kind of consistency I'm going to tolerate from a series.
She also has a leaf on her shirt.
Maybe that means she's going to fucking get a steering wheel through the chest like that asshole in Serenity. And I say asshole, I mean one of the main characters, but...
One of the most beloved characters from that show.
Yeah, whatever. As long as she's like, I'm like a leaf through the wind.
Katori's few throws a tantrum, and Hitomi says, look, if you want to quit, then go ahead and quit. You know, do what you want, because that's the type of person that you are. And when her black hair teammate is like, but if we try harder, you know, but we can do better. And the reason you're mad, Tomoko, is that you're jealous of them. We can be more, if we're more creative like them and we make a solid plan, we can win. We're just as capable as they are. And Katori's like, but I really suck at studying or being creative. And Hitomi says, that's all right. As long as you feel the sting of defeat, then there's still room for you to become stronger. And
I like how
I really like that.
I like how it's also not very indicative to the idea that she has grown from this. Like, she still seems like kind of a twat waffle. Like, even the moment, they're like, we'll just have to study and get strong. She's like, but I'm bad at that! It's like, God!
And Hitomi's just like, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
It's like, I'll take care of this, too.
Well, I like how Hitomi doesn't say, like, you know, it's okay, best friend, we'll stick through this, you know, to the end. She's just like, no, you know, you're not a lost cause. You can still get better, so you don't have to give up yet. I mean, you can if you want to, but it's not pointless to keep on going, so you might as well stick around.
Yeah.
Very, continuing the idea that she's, you know, very detached and objective about things. And then we end again with Jin and Hyusei and Yotaro, and Jin just says, Four Eyes is going to be a lot busier soon with you joining his squad, and that's going to be a whole lot of work for him, and that's it. It's not an incredibly eventful chapter, like you said. It's just kind of, but it's nice to have those moments of reflection occasionally for a series. So it was a pretty dull thing, but it's not like I disliked it, so.
Yeah, it's a perfectly good chapter. I mean, I mentioned on Twitter, I was like, the fact that, you know, World Trigger is able to make a situation like this entertaining is credit to the series, because this is literally just a recap of everything that's happened. So, fun chapter. It's just not a very significant one. Mm-hmm. Let's wrap this up. Nick's got things to do.
Let's, favorite chapters and MVPs. My Hero Academia ran away with the chat room's favorite chapter this week, and I'm giving it mine too.
Yeah, so. I feel like we could actually do this pretty quickly. My Hero Academia won my chapter of the week, and All Might is my character of the week as well.
It was not the stiffest competition this week, unfortunately.
It was like everyone put their best effort in last week, and then they were all like, shit, you did, god damn it, you did two? Everybody? Even Bleach? Fuck! And then this week was the only time that, like, you know, like Horikoshi Sensei is like, oh, sweet!
It's like that one plot arc towards the end of Bakuman, where everyone is trying to beat Nimaya, And so they all put their best things out after putting everything in. And meanwhile, he's still just running rampant through it and still beating them every single week.
Yeah, it was a very good chapter for My Hero.
Yeah, I mean, just... I think that we should focus a little bit more on the positives rather than the lack of competition, because seriously, like, the moments that All Might has in that chapter are really, really good. You know, the flashbacks, the moment of reflection, the implication that this very well might be the end of him, but his determination to persist on, not just for his society's sake, but for Deku's sake, to be there for him, to mentor him, and the final counterpunch, all really good. And that chapter basically is all about him and All For One, and they're both really, really good contributions to that chapter.
Yeah, it's a brilliant chapter. It makes All Might a great hero, which is what this series is about. It's great seeing the other heroes fighting to give him the best opportunity they can, and I love how important it is to him to stay alive, not for himself, not even necessarily be a symbol anymore. He's like, I can't die because I need to keep mentoring Deku. And we know it's an inevitability thing. We know he's going to die. You know, he's been saying that he's losing his power, but it's nice to see the efforts he's going to go through because he's like, I'm not done teaching Deku yet. I won't be a failure to that.
And that's it.
Yeah. Let's wrap it up. Let's bring this home.
All right. So, thank you everyone for joining us for Weekly Manga Recap. We tend to record the show Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on hitbox.tv/RoloT. Sometimes, however, we do need to change things up, but why are you stabbing your eye? Oh,
I don't know. I couldn't figure out where my finger was supposed to go. I was like pointing up as though they're also on my webpage right now.
Follow us at RoloT, at My Ruler of Time, at WMR Podcast. That last one is our official podcast Twitter account, and we tend to, Chris tends to put stuff that is most relevant to the podcast on there. Also, be sure to check out our past episodes and Weekly Manga Recap at Podbean.com, on iTunes, and on our YouTube channel, Weekly Manga Recap, all one word. And on iTunes, we have a comment or rating so that you can help us beat the woodworking podcasts in the hobby section.
No one has done it in a while. I feel like we've lost the woodworkers. I didn't want to make this announcement on air. It's been a great 5 years, but the woodworkers have bought out Weekly Manga Recap.
They're going to put us in their wooden prison that they've just finished.
Yeah, I think they're gonna. I don't think they're gonna keep us. I think they're purchasing us mostly just to destroy us. They're like the Vince McMahon of podcasts. They're gonna purchase us just to own our library and then shit all over us in a podcast once. There's going to be like an event podcast where we invade them, and then by the end of the podcast,
they're going to shout us out repeatedly over the course of several months in a row to their working stars, their WWE woodworking entertainment stars.
Just shit all over us and then fire us.
Oh, God. Ah, that DDP guy. Oh, he couldn't carpenter anything.
What the fuck?
Anyhow, if you have questions you wanted to ask us or manga you want to suggest that we read, you can send that stuff to us via email, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. We appreciate all the stuff you guys sent us. Special thanks also go out to our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. We do Q&A episodes, we do movie commentary streams, and, of course, we do the bonus podcast once a month, available only for champion-level subscribers. Every little bit, however, helps out. We appreciate every bit of it, and it's very flattering that you guys are actually, like, willing to support us in that way. Thank you very much.
Special thanks goes to Richard Wodecki, who is our newest patron. Thank you very much, sir. It is much appreciated.
If we'd both do that, it's like we're actually beating him up as opposed to...
If we do it at the same time and then, like, release at the same time, it looks like we're fist-bumping and, like, magically
just
through the internet
out.
Give it a tone.
Just leaving him out, yeah.
Well, no, like, he's the internet that we're then fist-bumping through.
It's a three-way fist-bump.
Yeah, it's like, boom! And then they're a part of it. But if we both come at the screen, then it's like we're attacking him.
Thanks as well go out to the guys who really help us to put this podcast together.
The woodworkers.
They built the foundation for us to...
We're just following their path.
Who do you think made my desk, Chris? A woodworker. Steve Manotakarist, he does awesome work. You can see, like, the Koino Kodachi's title card here. And many, many other pieces that he has helped make for us over the course of, like, 5 years now. So thank you so much, man. NorakFanboy.DeviantArt.com, iDropBoobs.tumblr.com, Patreon.com/SteveMan, and other locations yes. You can follow him on and check out his artwork.
He does commissions, everything like that. If you ever want to check out his work, just message him. He's a great guy. He'd love to help.
And, of course, Infamous Planet.
He's a fuck. Don't do anything for him. Screw him.
Oh. no shout-out for Infamous Planet this week, I guess.
Fuck that guy.
Be happening. Anyhow, to close things out, the recommendation we're going to be taking for next week. Now, Chris.
Okay.
I said at the start of the year, we need to do some bad series.
Okay.
A bad series, and I needed a little bit of a break from them. But you know what? When was the last really bad one we did? I guess you could say, like, Shinsuke, you know, Iron Man was pretty bad.
I liked it, though.
Yeah, it was enjoyably bad. And it's been a while even since we did that one. You know, we spent last month doing, series that we basically took ourselves, series that individually each of us enjoy. And then we took Koi no Kodachi, which is a series that we came away thinking very positively of. It's time to go back to the well. And so this recommendation comes to us from someone who actually sent it as a recommendation for Valentine's Day with a group of romance manga saying, here are some bad ones, here are some good ones. The series is called Kyo Koi o Hajimemasu, or much easier to say, Today I'll Start Our Love. So,
it's a very English-y title.
Today I'll Start Our Love. It's a shoujo romance manga.
Shoujo as well, okay.
I'm just going to read the description that she sent us, which was, do you like series where characters are able to overcome extreme bullying, where despite everything that's done and said to them, they're still able to be themselves? Well, too bad! This is a series about a girl who decides to give in to the bullies and falls in love with a guy who not only bullies her, but also encourages other characters to bully her and even tries to rape her at one point.
Oh, Jesus. After this? After fucking A Silent Voice?
So thank you for that recommendation. She did not include her name in a sign-off anywhere, so I'm going to keep her anonymous, but thank you very much for that recommendation. That's what we're taking. Thank you. I'm looking forward to this one.
I don't think you are.
That's going to do it. I'm not sure on what note we should end on.
I'd like to think that you're like, well, that's the episode, and I just see a Nick-shaped cloud of dust, and I hear NXT turned on in the background. Whoa, suplex!
Fuck out! Jim Ross is calling it.
He's back.